Happy holidays. How's that this time?
That's
Sorry,
good. That's
folks.
good.
Welcome back to another episode of Teed It Up with CNV. I'm your host, Connor, as always, with the V of CNV for a special holiday episode. Gladdy, what's going on, man?
I'm
Tell me about
doing,
that holiday party
yeah,
again.
I'm doing well. So for the background, for those who don't understand, we started recording this, and Connor's got some Walmart Wi-Fi. I'm gonna blame him for this. I think we do know it's him, but he's got some Walmart Wi-Fi he cut out, so we're starting over. I'm doing well. Went to my first company holiday party this past weekend. I committed zero HR violations. I was up money at the blackjack table, and I watched a guy almost fight his girlfriend and get arrested. So, kind of a nice little whirlwind of a Saturday night, but it was a good time. I've got 2 more days of work before I'm kind of done for the year, and I got 2 full weeks off. So I'm in great spirits. I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm good. I was down money at my company holiday party this year. As in they gave us $50 in chips and I just gave it to, they only gave it to like employees. So I just gave it to my friend's girlfriend. I was just like, I'm going home soon anyways. So just have it. So I guess that's technically down. But other than that, I finished up finals last week for my seventh, oh, bad math, fifth out of sixth semester of law school. So we're putting up the fourth quarter is officially on law school. So that's always exciting. And it's good to not have to think about that when I come home from work now. So I'm good. It's a special holiday episode here. Special by we have no actual like holiday anything really. It's just gonna be like we always do with sports. Today we're going to talk about the NFL. The Lions lose for the first time since week two, three, week three, sorry. We're going to talk about the college football playoff because there was no college football to talk about this past week. And we're going to mention what did I miss?
The Heisman.
The Heisman, college football in general. That's why I was thinking the other way. And that'll be all, folks, and we'll get you on your merry ways to whatever Christmas or holiday party that you have to get to during this holiday season. So where do you want to start today?
Let's start with the Heisman, go through college, make our way to the NFL.
Yeah, the Heisman Trophy, Travis Hunter, the two-way man himself, against all of Vladdy's fight against the man this year, wins the Heisman. I have to say, I'm not shocked. But I was start. I think I mentioned it multiple times throughout the last few weeks that I was sort of on that Ashton Jeanty vibe, and that could change very quick by Abdul Carter like hitting him in the backfield 5 times in a week and a half from now. But I thought he was snubbed, but I wasn't surprised by Travis Hunter winning it. He's the media darling. He's everything that college football wants to be with this marketable guy who's on these like video game streams, who plays both ways. He's going to be a top five pick. He's everything. He plays for Deion Sanders. He's everything that college football wanted from a marketability standpoint. And not only that, he is a very good player. What he did this year is extremely, extremely impressive. I don't want to take away from that. But what Ashton Jeanty has been doing this year has not been done since a man named Barry Sanders, who Detroit is very well aware of.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm disappointed, but not surprised. This was kind of the media darling, and yeah, you're right. We're not going to sit here and try and demean him because he is sensational. He's unique. He's a unicorn. It's the best two-way player of our lifetime. You probably have to go back to Charles Woodson to see a kind of a previous lifetime at someone at that level. So yes, no one's going to sit here and say he's bad. But I think when you talk about the best player in college, and maybe you put away the NFL prospect rankings and status that the guy is, it was Ashton Jeanty. Like I said, he put up numbers that haven't been seen since Barry Sanders. He sat out 8 entire quarters. And by the way, one of those players is still playing football. The other one is now practicing for the Underwear Olympics. And mind you, that other one also had the 8th best player in America, Shedeur Sanders, on his team, and they're somehow still not playing. So I kind of go a little. This is just me ranting, but kind of crazy that a certain Colorado team had 2 of the 8 best players in America and still lost 3 football games. Meanwhile, Boise State continues. But I'm not mad. I'm definitely not mad. It is what it
So,
is. It is what it is.
So do you think part of like I kind of went back and thought about what I have against Travis Hunter or what it is, and the stats, while they're not Heisman worthy on the offensive side of the ball, are still so impressive. And I had this thought where I don't think, and this would never happen because it's literally impossible to play these types of positions together, but do you think if he played, and obviously I'm not going to say he's not getting enough respect because he won the Heisman, but as far as this podcast goes, do you think you would hold him in a higher regard if he played his position on defense where he could have actual stats? Because for me, that's not watching Colorado every week and doesn't, pay attention to Colorado on the daily, I don't really know how good of a corner he actually is on face. I just kind of go off of what the media tells me, what I see when I actually get to watch him, because it's not something I can go look in the box score and see, oh, he had three sacks. Oh, he was a middle linebacker who had like 10 tackles. Oh, he like a good cornerback doesn't have stats. And
Correct.
so I
And
think that plays into my bias a little, I think.
no,
I just kind of had that thought
I
recently.
completely agree with that. I actually think that might be the only argument for Shedeur Sanders to win this Heisman, is he was so good as a corner that nobody even threw to him. It was kind of that Sauce Gardner his first year in the NFL, where he was so good that the other team's quarterbacks just said, all right, well, half the field is unavailable because I'm not going to throw at that guy. And that's kind of what Travis Hunter did, and that's absolutely correct. And again, that to me is his only argument, because like you said, on the offensive side, not a single statistical category in the top seven or eight for any receiver. On the defensive side, nothing of that sorts. But again, like you said, corners don't get to sit there like a free safety or middle linebacker. They don't get to blitz the quarterback every other play. They're usually the ones that are left on an island if you're playing kind of, or if you trust your corner, especially the way you should trust a Travis Hunter. So I agree with that, and I do think that is the one piece of argument for Travis Hunter to win this Heisman, is he was so good people just forgot about him. And then that's kind of where I countered in discussions with friends and kind of when talking in person, is but on the flip side, Ashton Jeanty was so good that you had to put eight guys in the box just to try and stop him. So it goes both ways. But I agree with the point you make.
I think going to the Ashton Jeanty side is, I think he is the victim of Travis Hunter being the media darling, like with all those factors I mentioned earlier. While he, and you mentioned that he's in the playoff, he is in the Mountain West and unfortunately suffered from the comma. I don't think it was just because he was in the Mountain West. I think it was. Or just because Travis Hunter was his media darling. But I think you could say together, he was a victim of those two things preventing him from
I
winning the
mean,
Heisman.
sure, but what big games did Travis Hunter light up?
No, I agree. I'm saying, like, from like why they actually gave it out, Steve. I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I agree. I think we're both on the same page
Yeah,
in that
I'm
we
not
would have
fighting you
rather
here.
seen
I'm just
Jeanty get it.
I'm fighting the narrative. Like, show me what big game Colorado played. They lost to seven loss Nebraska. They didn't play Arizona State. I don't think they played Iowa State. So who'd they play all year? So it
I
is
don't
what it
know off the
is.
top of my head.
And obviously the Oregon game was great, but that was 4 months ago. So I'll be fair. It is what it is. Great for Hunter. He will be a top three or four pick, probably be the first non-quarterback taken. Since, like I said, sensational pro prospect, that should not have any consideration when talking about the Heisman, though. To the CFP.
To the CFP. Should we just, I mean, let's just cover the games that are going to be this weekend, I think.
Absolutely.
And then we can kind of in our later episode, and analyze from there. So Friday night, which I'm going to start with, I like it. I like that they're doing this Friday night under the lights, that Notre Dame thing, and then three games on Saturday, in each time slot. I think that was perfect. Maybe you could have rushed a second night game, but I think that, I don't know. I've heard complaints about a Friday night football game, but I think this is perfectly placed here. Notre Dame, Indiana. Notre Dame, 7-point favorite. They're going to be the home team, not really an interstate rivalry per se, but two interstate teams. It'll be the least, I don't know if you can even say like not like non-home advantage for any of these schools, but I mean, Indiana's going to travel because it's only a couple of hours, whatever, however Notre Dame lets them. And it's a tale of two, I think, two of the biggest unknowns. They're definitely two of the teams that I think are casted out. Obviously, Notre Dame from kind of their early season mishaps to kind of playing their way back into this down the stretch. But Indiana and Notre Dame both haven't been tested. I think that's the consensus with a lot of people. I don't really. It's one of those things where Indiana played Ohio State. Do we even want to say Notre Dame played anybody? I don't really think you can,
I
but
don't think they did either.
yeah, in that I could see these teams being competitive with the top dogs, not beating, but competitive, and I could see a game where whoever wins this game is blown out in the next game.
Yeah, I think a lot of that will depend on what's going on with Carson Beck. I haven't seen any updates on him. I know it started with, oh, he's day to day, directly after kind of that SEC title game, and then it kind of got cloudy, and we'll see. I guess good for Georgia. They have those bye weeks. They don't have to play for another 2 weekends. But in terms of this game specifically, I think this has probably the potential to be the closest game. And maybe that's more of I have less faith in Notre Dame than I do in the rest of the teams that are going to be hosting the first round games.
Probably, I agree.
I think that Notre Dame's got a very, very good defense. That's something that, as you mentioned, it's great on paper. How often has it truly been tested? Now, on the flip side, Indiana has bulldozed teams, but they also played against one real defense in Ohio State, and they needed 56 minutes to get top 100 yards of total offense. So, I think you summarize it perfectly. This is the battle of the unknowns, and in a moment like that, I will take the home field advantage. I will go with Notre Dame, and I just think that maybe the talent wins out, where Notre Dame is a little bit more of your quote unquote blue chip 4 and 5 stars, and Indiana is your upstart guys that Cicchinetti's familiar with, and they've been able to kind of beat the teams that they should beat because they have the familiarity. And when there's a talent equality, that's when their coaching comes in. But when there's a talent disparity, I think this is where they're going to struggle.
And I'm going to take Indiana. I think they're going to be my only upset pick of the weekend. Notre Dame, like you said, and Indiana got an F on their only test. Notre Dame hasn't even sat down for the midterm yet. And I think they're going to come out, and Cignetti is going to have that team ready for another test. They took that midterm. They got an F on it, but they know how to study now. And they're going to come out prepared. And I think this is going to, like you said, probably be the closest game of the four first round games. And I hate to say this because I already mentioned it. I think Indiana being in state will play somewhat of a role in, I don't know, contributing to maybe not the home atmosphere you're going to see in some of these other games. But then again, it's under the lights of Notre Dame. I'm going to take Indiana. I just think, Notre Dame has gone under the radar far too long. And like I said, while they are the great unknown and they very well could be very solid, I'm just going with the team I've seen more and that I believe has been slightly more tested.
I like it.
The next game, the noon slate on TNT, is SMU at Penn State. That's 6 versus 11. Penn State is an 8.5 point favorite. I think this is going to be a classic Penn. Oops, sorry, I just threw my phone down. This is going to be a classic Penn State win. This is going to be one of those games, and I know SMU has kind of been firepower all year, and you saw what Penn State's defense looks like in the Big Ten Championship. But I hate to say it, this offense, as good as they've been all season, is not what Oregon was by any stretch of the imagination. I think this is going to be it's an interesting game because I think the noon game at Penn State, SMU is nowhere near Penn State geographically, in case you wanted to get a map up. I like Penn State in one of those 24-17 games. I think SMU is going to cover. I'm worried because I do believe SMU is a scrappy team and Penn State is going to let them hang around in this game, but I just think at home Penn State knows how to win these types of one-score games.
The old Tony Bennett. We're not going to be good enough to blow anyone out, but we're never going to get blown out ourselves. I love it. I agree with you on the result side. I think Penn State wins. I do think it'll be a little bit more than that. I think they're going to ride the home field. This is a whiteout, even though it's not under the lights, which kind of doesn't totally mean typical Penn State whiteout.
Yeah, and I'll say this, I'm curious with all these games, and I don't think it'll play any effect on t that from what you'll see on TV. Like, you're not going to see empty seats, but I do wonder about the atmosphere a little bit in all four locations in terms of students being home for the holidays.
Yeah, that is something we'll see. I think that's one thing that we do have to kind of validly bring up, and this is kind of one of those things that I was actually okay with it. Not okay with, I was actually pro when it came to expanded playoff. There wasn't many of these, but it's the whole now that you have on-campus games, you will see Southern teams go north. SMU
Yeah.
will have kind of the quote-unquote biggest trek of any
Right.
team going north. I think that'll kind of give Penn State a little advantage. And most, and kind of for me, the biggest things, I just think that Penn State offense will kind of be able to continue the high where they kind of moved the ball all over Oregon. They never got any help from their defense. So,
So do we want to look at the most north SMU's been this year? Is
probably
Louisville.
Carolina.
Louisville. I think that's, is that more north than North Carolina?
I think it is.
Yeah. Louisville, the first week of October.
Lovely. Yeah, so I think that'll play a role, and I think Penn State wins this one. The other thing I want to mention is Penn State no longer has a backup quarterback.
Yeah.
The Bo
Bo.
Pribula, I don't know how you say his last name, but with Drew Aller staying for another season, he can't continue to ride the bench, so he goes into the portal. This is where I become the generational complainer. College football is beyond broken that you have, and for this is the second year in a row, mind you. I remember doing this exact same thing when Texas's backup transferred last year, right before the playoffs started. And how do you have this portal open in season for teams that are in the playoffs?
Okay,
And
yeah.
those teams, like, they are going to lose some players, and they can't really turn around and recruit anybody else because they have to focus on what they have to focus in front of them. They don't have
Right.
time to turn around and go recruit the guys that are down at UCF and those smaller schools that they think can make a jump, or the guys that aren't getting a lot of playing time at the bigger school. So it is something that everyone has complained about. And I think, kind of like with the format of the playoff, I think it will eventually get sorted out. I don't think it'll be as quick as the format of the playoff. I think that'll get sorted out this offseason. But that's just kind of incredible that you have backup quarterbacks who not just a backup who's never played. Like, this guy had design
Yep.
plays for him with the
Yep. That's what I was going to
Wildcat.
say.
He
Yep.
has he's actually had kind of a defined role, albeit a small one, with this Penn State team, and he's got to make the decision that's best for himself. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with what happened. It's just he got put into a situation where you can't win.
Yeah. For him, the transfer portal is exactly like what you want someone like that to take advantage of, a guy who's sat behind Aller for multiple years. He's a senior and only has two more years of eligibility to where, yeah, like those are the types of situations where you want kids to have the access to transfer and not have to sit out. But I completely agree with the timing of it and that they're going to have to fix that. It's not fair. And there's a set day where free agency starts in pro sports and there should be in college sports, if that's what this basically turns into.
To the 4 o'clock game.
To the 4 o'clock game. Sorry. I didn't know which one was four and which one was eight.
Texas
Okay.
Clemson.
Texas, Clemson at Texas. Texas, the biggest favorite of the day at 12 points. A lot of orange. That's what I'll lead off with. My eyes are going to be going numb for that one. I think this is going to, like the spread says, this is going to be the biggest blowout of the day. I actually think, although Clemson won on a walk-off, I think SMU favors a little better against Penn State in that they can score and that Penn State isn't necessarily up for a shootout like we saw them do with Oregon, where Clemson, I don't think, really matches up with these SEC teams that well anymore, unfortunately, like they did maybe 4 or 5, 6 years ago now. And in a Texas environment, you saw And you've seen, I know that was in August at this point, but you saw what happened when you put Clemson on the field with these types of teams when they played Georgia. They just don't have the manpower now. Klubnik is not up to the speed of what Texas is going to throw defensively. And for all the talk of the Ewers and Manning stuff, what hasn't gotten credit the last few weeks is how good Texas defense is. And I know they had a backup quarterback in for a lot of that game in Georgia, but that was another low-scoring game the weekend before in what we're going to call the biggest rivalry in college football now, apparently. At Texas A&M, you put up a performance where they could barely even move the ball, past their own two right feet. And that this defense is humming along to where who cares who the quarterback is? And I think Clemson won't be at home. This defense will be able to feed off that, and Clemson won't be able to score with them.
I'm gonna parrot everything you have to say, so I'll just say I completely agree. I don't think Clemson can run with these types of teams anymore. I don't think the athletes are there. I don't think the talent's there, like you said, as it was during the Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence years. So give me Texas.
It's an interesting one because I think Clemson, given the culture at that school for football, where if they had this game at their place, I would give them a legitimate chance to pull off an upset. I wouldn't say like an amazing chance or that I'd favorite them in that game, but I wouldn't have them a 12-point underdog in a playoff game, that's for sure. And I think they'd probably get hurt the most by not hosting this weekend of all the teams. Then the last one. Tennessee at Ohio State. Ohio State, 7.5 point favorites. They'll host again. Let me remind you what happened the last time they hosted a game at the Horseshoe. They lost to their rival Michigan for the third, four straight season. I don't know what to think about Ohio State. We talked about question marks with Notre Dame and Indiana. Ohio State is the biggest question mark for me. You can either come out. This is Ryan Day's last strike. He can have them ready to go. They have the talent to beat anyone in the country, and they could come out and do that. They could come out and make a statement and beat an SEC team, yeah, on their turf, and say, hey, like, we are a legit contender in this thing. There's a reason why we have the third highest odds to win this thing right now is the 8 seed. They can lay an egg. They can say, listen, we lost to Michigan. We didn't make the Big Ten championship again. They could quit before this thing is even started. Where I'm going to take Ohio State in this one is because Tennessee down the stretch with a freshman quarterback, Ayamah Vela, or however you say it, has not looked good in some of these tougher environments down the stretch. And this is going to be one of the toughest, a night game at the Horseshoe.
And once again, I completely parrot whatever you have to say, what you have to say. This Tennessee team, the offense was, we were talking about Nico for Heisman in September, and then once they started playing some of the real teams, the offensive output started sputtering, and I think they only kind of cleaned 30 points once since September. I agree completely on the Ohio State thing, where if they come out and their first drive is three and out, there's going to, we said it last week, there's going to be a lot of boo birds, and it can kind of snowball very, very quickly. But you are correct. This, I've said this all year, and I'm not going to change now just because they lost two games. This is the most talented roster in America. You just have to find a way how to not lose your fucking mind when you're playing with them, and how to get baited into playing a game that you shouldn't be playing against your rival. Shout out Ryan Day for that. But you're right that they do have the high odds or higher odds than most of the other teams for a reason. It's just, can they put it together? I'll also go OSU. The offense does start slowly, even in the games that they do win, so that might be an issue because the longer you hang around, like I said, the more the anxiety creeps into the crowd, and that makes its way down to the field, and you can feel it as players. And just the longer Tennessee hangs around, the more uncomfortable it's going to get. I'll also add that I've seen that there's a lot of Tennessee fans making this trip.
One of the
They've had,
close, it's probably the second closest
yeah, oh yeah.
geographically,
Like that's the other thing is, like we talk about, oh, Southern teams going north. Just because Tennessee's in the SEC doesn't mean they're some Bible Belt Alabama team who's never seen snow in their lives. Tennessee's, it wasn't Tennessee the Mason-Dixon line 150 years ago, at least the northern part of it.
I will say this though, they famously, I think it was about a month ago now, they had heaters when they played Georgia and it was 57 degrees. So maybe they are a little softer than we thought.
All right, I didn't know that. So fair enough. We'll give them that. But that's entertaining. I'm gonna bet on the talent at home. We'll see what happens. But I think this is kind of the most intriguing game, probably up there with Notre Dame and Indiana, just kind of having that in-state matchup. And I think it's kind of a perfect nightcap for that Saturday just trilogy of playoff games. And I'm excited for it. I think for your sake and for everyone's sake, hopefully these games are close, or else I'm going to be insufferable the next time we talk.
Yeah. And like I hate to say it, but I actually think they're all gonna be close. I think two of the four are gonna be close.
That, you know, you want that. You want them to be close. Because again, if we sit here and we get four blowouts, I'm not even gonna let you intro next week. I'm gonna go right into it and say, oh boy, am I glad we let three lost teams and everybody and their mother play in this playoff.
So this I really hope this because I'm gonna need these to be. I'm gonna need three or four of these to be close because next round. Although the way the buys work,
Yeah, I mean,
it could go
Arizona
either
State,
way.
Boise
But I think
State, you
next,
get some close games there.
yeah. But I think next round is where you could actually see the blowouts from actually some of the higher seeds,
That's
technically,
also
unfortunately.
true. Yeah. If you get a Texas just assaulting an Arizona State and a Georgia assaulting whoever plays then, you're kind of looking around and you're saying, well, what are we doing here, guys?
Yeah.
But yeah, well, obviously that's just some nice friendly banter. So I have nothing else in the college game. Do you?
No, that's it for this week. Should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. We haven't really, I don't know. It's something new. It's the perfect year for it. I've said it all year. And I'm ready to be right about the 12-team playoff.
Awesome.
To the NFL, we'll start with the Lions. I'm sure Vladdy's going to have a lot to say. I missed a good portion of this game, unfortunately. I caught the parts I needed to catch, though. Lions four, or sorry, I'm used to calling wins. Bills 48, Lions 42. Where do you want to start with this one? I'm just going to start by saying this. Josh Allen is amazing. There's no reason anyone else should be even sniffed or put in the conversation for the MVP this year. I missed a good portion of the second half, like I said, but the first half, when they were just absolutely unstoppable, some of those plays he makes, I don't know, putting a spy on him or doing whatever, are gonna stop. Like he had three or four plays where he extends the play a good 4 seconds and finds Ty Johnson of all people,
Yeah, 6 yards
17
down
yards
the
down the
field.
field. I don't think that play is stoppable, unfortunately, for Aaron Glenn. And yeah, we'll get to some of the miscues on defense, but some of that is just Josh Allen is that good at football, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'll quickly comment on that and then go into the actual game. You're absolutely correct. In my friend group here from home, we got one kid who loves to harp on Aaron Glenn, and after that game, he's sitting there screaming about things
Yeah.
that he probably has no idea what he was actually talking about. And he's like, and I'm in my head, I'm like, dude, come on, man, like. That's the MVP ahead of you. Like you said, how do you defend guy runs around in the backfield for 30 seconds and throws something across his body 45 yards? You can't defend that. There
Yeah.
is no coverage. There is no thought process. It's just that's the MVP doing what the MVP does.
Should we? Okay, so that's excuse one. I'll give excuse two. This team is very, very injured on defense, was
It
going
keeps getting
into it,
worse.
and it only got, we'll get into how it got worse, but that's excuse number two. Now let's get into it.
All right, so second loss of the season. Unlike the Bucks game, I don't think you can be mad about this loss. Like we just said, you're up against the MVP, one of the hottest teams in the entire league, and you have the remains of a defense that got thinner as the game went on. You start super slow on offense with, I think your first two drives were eight total plays and like 2 total yards with one first down. And you blink, and 4 minutes into the game, you're down 14-0, and your game script is completely off. And that is just like what happened in the Buccaneers. That forces Jared Goff to throw like a maniac. And to be fair, he did very well.
He
Five
did.
touchdowns, zero interceptions against a good defense that kind of knew what was coming because you got thrown off your game script. You look at those stats, I think we had like 10 rushing attempts. That is not how the Detroit Lions are going to win football games. And that's the
No.
same thing that happened in the Bucs. I guess maybe before I continue, just to kind of visualize this, I'm going to tell you some numbers and I want you to tell me what they are. So in order, 28, 55, 23, 18, 25, 25, 15, 22, 30, 29, 36, 34, 41, and 59. Do you know what those numbers are?
The length, the amount of yards per Bills drive.
No, that is the passing attempts for Jared Goff in every game of the season.
Oh, okay.
So if I quickly go back, if you'll notice, one game had 55, one game had 59. What do those have in common? Those are our two losses of the season.
Interesting.
You get thrown off your game script, you have to do things you don't want to do, and things go wrong. So that was just, it was unfortunate. It is what it is. The offense did find its rhythm as the kind of the first half wore on, and we even and after that Riley Bass missed field goal from 20 yards, we actually had the opportunity to tie the game going into halftime. Unfortunately, Amon-Ra picked a very, very bad time to drop the ball, just something he never does, because it forced us into a longer field goal where we would have had a first down and could have continued that drive to try and tie the game. And after that Amon-Ra drop, Jake Bates proceeds to have one of the worst kicks I've ever seen. I don't know if you were still watching at this point, but
No, I missed it. I was listening on the radio.
you could have added a second field goal post on the left side, and he still would have been wide left. Like it was Noah Ruggles against Georgia in the college football playoff 2 years ago to ring in the new year, where it was just like, wow. So that was unfortunate. Bates picked a bad time to have a bad kick, so you go into the half down seven as opposed to down four, maybe even tied. You come out, you give up a touchdown, then you finally force a punt, but you follow that up with an Amon-Ra fumble where he catches it, takes four steps, gets stripped, and then once again you're playing catch up. You're down 21 at that point. You're playing just kind of touchdown for touchdown, which that's not going to help you. And that takes us into the kind of the onside kick decisions where I didn't understand the first one, and the second one made me lose my mind. You're down 10 points with 12 minutes to go, and you try an onside kick. And you know what? I understand the logic. You've got one stop on like eight drives all game. That's still a better percentage than an onside kick.
Yeah, I'm kind of the belief now. I think, and this is not like me being wow wow woo wow, like we got the short end of the stick here with the offside. They need to like have that come back to some kind of median.
Yes,
And
no, you.
that like it's literally not an option now. And I know it worked in the Bills, Bears, Vikings game, I believe 3 weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, to get them into that game into overtime. But that's the only one of like 15 attempts this year to work. That's
Yes,
not good. I want something that's like a 1 in 3 chance, maybe.
well,
1 in 4
you
chance.
bring that one up. That one was pure luck. That hit a tight end's foot who wasn't even looking at the ball. That's the only reason they recover that. You've
Yeah.
got Johnny Munt sitting there trying to block with the actual hands guys behind him, and he just doesn't understand that it hits him in the foot.
Yeah.
That's the only reason. It's not because they had a great kick and they got there first. No, you're completely correct. The way this rule is written, where you can't overload one side, and they've kind of
To
changed.
declare.
They change, yeah. You have to declare it, so there's no more ha ha ha. We got you. There is no more taking off early the way they used to be. Like they look at you, and if you even appear to be offsides, they start throwing flags like it's Halloween. It's incredibly stupid. The
Throw
one thing
flags on
I,
Halloween.
yeah, I don't know. That was poor. But the one thing I've always said is they should make it like what the XFL did, where if you want this, you have 1 4th and 15 play from your own 30 or 35. You run it, you either get it and you keep the ball, or you don't, and the other team takes it over the other way. But that's the what I would do about fixing the onside kick rule. About that actual game, I don't understand it. There's 12 minutes to go.
Yeah.
I understand your defense doesn't exist. One stop out of 7 or 8 drives for the Bills is a lot better than, like you said, one successful onside versus the 30 attempts that have probably gone on in the league so far this year. And then the part where I kind of lost my mind, because like again, I disagreed with the first one, but at least I understood the argument. If you're taking an onside kick when there's 12 minutes left, what the fuck are you doing not taking the onside kick when there's 8 minutes left and you make it 10 points again? What's changed?
So that's where, like, in a perfect world, the 12 minutes makes no sense, way too much time. The 8 minutes, if you're in that same situation, which you were, is where you would have tested it, because you would have had another opportunity to see your defense not get a stop, another opportunity to watch the clock go down, watch how much time they're taking off the clock. That, yeah, like, but like you said, I don't like to me, I would like me personally, I wouldn't have gone for it on either situation.
I'm with you. I'm just saying if you do it once, you have to do it the second time when there's even less. And the thing that pissed me off even more is I make my way into social media after that, and you have all the Dan bots who are trying to sit there and talk about stats and game theory and, oh, our defense sucks. Well, then why didn't you yell at Dan for not going at for it the second time? Like, it's okay to question what's going on. I think that was incredibly, like, would it have changed the game? Would we have come back and won? Probably not. But I don't understand the thought process of doing it once but not both. You either go twice and say, you know what, I don't think my defense can stop this guy and I do need to steal a possession, or you don't go at all and you say, well, hopefully we get lucky once and we'll save the onside for the end when it's desperation time with 30 seconds left. I didn't understand that.
Yeah. And I guess moving forward, we could talk. Let's kind of get about the outlook here. Is you mentioned that you weren't necessarily mad about the loss. You lost to a team that, listen, the Lions and the Eagles right now are the most the lowest odds for Super Lions, Eagles versus Lions or Eagles, there we go, versus the Bills are both the tied for the lowest odds for a Super Bowl matchup. This is a very good Bills team. Josh Allen did Josh Allen things in this game, but it wasn't that for me. I think it was a combination of the injuries. I would almost rather have gotten like I know the score, the 6 points. It wasn't really a 6 point game. It was probably a two score game, to be honest. But I would have rather they'd almost come out and lose like a Ravens last year style
Oh,
game
yeah.
where you just got outclassed and you were on this 10-11 game winning streak and just got punched in the mouth and go, okay, listen, guys, we have the team here, but it's not going to be easy, even with this team here. We just got absolutely embarrassed, and that's a wake-up call. This wasn't really a wake-up call because you didn't necessarily get truly punched in the mouth, and you got actually took a sucker punch because you lost so many guys for an extended period of time. Not only did you prove you couldn't do it defensively with this group as it stands right now with who's healthy, but you lost guys from that too. And that's where I think it wasn't just a wake-up call. It was like a, oh no, this isn't the same. This isn't even this is literally not the same team we had a month ago.
Yeah, you lose Khalil Dorsey to a shattered leg. Aleem McNeil tears his ACL. Carlton Davis breaks a jaw and apparently can return as early as the NFC title game. But what does return really mean? Because you're coming back from a broken jaw. I don't think you're
Yeah.
practicing with one of those things. So
No,
that
you have to
goes
tweak
on.
that out of a straw for the time
Yeah.
being.
I mean, David Montgomery is most or almost certainly out for the season. They haven't
Yeah.
officially placed him on injured reserve yet because they keep looking for 17th opinions from doctors to try and see if one guy says, hey, man, just like we don't need surgery yet. Just like take a couple weeks off and then you can come back and play, which more power to David Montgomery. Dude's an absolute warrior, but he's probably done for the season too.
Yeah.
I don't understand how this happens. I've never seen a team get hurt like this, especially with all of it on one side of the ball. I think Monty is kind of the first true injury we've suffered on the offensive side that's long term, whereas on the defensive side of the 11 starters we had, we're probably down to three. The only ones who haven't really been hurt are the safeties.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have functional linebackers anymore. You watch that with the Bills. We were completely lost. The defensive line, I mean, I'm not sure who's supposed to pressure anymore. I mean, Za'Darius Smith barely even got on the field. And some of my friends are like, well, how does that happen? It's like, well, you know, for the pass rushers to get on the field, they need to have third and long. There needs to be passing downs.
Yeah.
The Bills averaged almost 10 yards per play. So there wasn't going to be very many times for you to get out there and say, well, we know they're throwing it this time. Get out there, number 99. So that was
Right.
unfortunate. Hey, it is what it is. It doesn't really change anything of the outlook for this team. We talked about it last week. You have to go 3-1 down the stretch and you're guaranteed the one seed. It's now just unfortunate that that one loss was the first of the four games because now you have to win three in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a surprisingly better outlook than I thought you were going to have on it, to be honest. And I had a worse outlook on it because it made me think I went down the rabbit hole of this is the SOL. The second that we get a good team, we were Super Bowl favorites for a while this year, the injury bug happens, and you think the Lions aren't cursed anymore. We have Dan Campbell. We go for it on fourth down. We win every game. And here come the same old Lions. And
Yeah,
I hope that's not the case.
I feel like same old lines is a little harsh because usually that was us figuring out ways to beat ourselves on the field, not us falling off and fielding an entire all-pro team from the hospital.
It's the modern version
Sure.
of the SOL.
Sure. But yeah, future outlook, then they go to Chicago for an outdoor game against a Bears team that looks like they've kind of quit.
Very much so. What are they at? Like, they're at six in a row now?
More or
Seven? They were 4-2. They're what? 4-11 now?
something like that.
So 7 in a row?
9 in a row.
Yeah.
There you
Quick
go.
math.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean they're looking like a team that's just kind of ready to play for some draft position. Then there's San Francisco, which is a team that I'm about to talk about when we go through the kind of the rest of the storylines or the games of the NFL, if you will, and then the Vikings, who are kind of just quietly right with us. And that's the thing that's scary is, like you said, Super Bowl favorites for 3 months in a row, and now you're staring down the barrel of one bad game and you're a five seed. It's insane. So we'll see what happens. But anything else in the lines before we get to the rest of the league?
I will say this, this is the year to have a five seed because that fourth division winner, I mean,
I
maybe
actually
I'm,
disagree.
yeah, actually now that I think about it, maybe I'm overstepping with the way the Bucks have been playing down the stretch.
The Bucks are healthy and they're scary. The NFC West, I don't want to face the Rams in
Yeah.
LA, even though LA isn't really we'd probably have more fans than the Rams at that game, but yeah, I wouldn't want to be a five seed.
Yeah, you're right. Take it back.
But yeah, so we'll see what happens there. Anything else in the Lions before we go to the rest of the league?
Let's go to the rest of the league.
All right. I'll start with the Colts. Comedy of errors that kind of torpedo their season in a must-win game and what was probably viewed as their most important game in 5 or 6 years. Texans clinch a division, and now that you lose the head-to-head tiebreaker to Denver, you're effectively out of the playoffs, all but mathematically. The actual errors, Jonathan Taylor does the stupidest thing in football. This happens 2 to 3 times a season in the NFL and college. Drops the football at the half-yard line, and the momentum of the ball carries it out of bounds. Touchback kills a touchdown for him. And I don't understand. Like it happened. We had the same conversation with Malachi Corley at the beginning of the
Yep.
season, so I'm not going to sit there and like spend too much time on it. But how are you like so interested in celebrating that you just don't wait to like go through the back of the end zone? Why aren't like I don't think this is necessarily a coaching thing, but why don't more players just have that mindset of let me get through the back of the end zone and then I can celebrate? It's 4 extra steps, it's 1.5 seconds, and I don't have to be the butt end of a stick for the next 6 months.
Especially at this point, like we've seen so many examples of,
Yep.
like you said, this happening multiple times a year. That a running back coach, if I'm a running back coach in July at OTAs, I'm showing clips of people doing
Oh, yeah.
that. And I'm showing clips of people running the ball into the end zone like a normal person.
Yeah, it's not 2012. Like I keep referencing this because it's the first time I've ever seen it. Utah, Oregon, the night game. Utah thinks they've scored. Guy drops ball. Fans are going crazy. The ESPN scoreboard's updating, and then they cut back to the field, and you see the Oregon guys running it down the other way, and you're like, well, "What's going on
Yeah.
here?" And then and it's like the refs never blew the whistle. The clock's still going, and they score a touchdown. Like it's not that anymore. You've had probably 50 plus examples since then of don't be a fucking idiot, and players are still fucking idiots. So I don't understand that, but it is what it is. They follow it up afterwards with an attempted double pass where Richardson throws it out wide to Adonai Mitchell. He then proceeds to bumble the ball around in his hands for good 2 seconds to try and find the laces, tries to throw it back to Anthony Richardson. One problem, in that time, the Denver Broncos linebacker understands what's going on, jumps the ball, and takes it all the way back for a pick six. Great way for the Colts to pretty much end their season, and kind of comical. I don't know if you got to watch any of those plays live or on replay,
Nope.
but both of them were hilarious. After that, Rams 49ers, after a great couple weeks of like divisional Thursday games, we have an absolute stinker.
That was a god awful, sorry, god awful football game.
Yeah, I understand they were playing in the pouring rain, and kind of the 49ers were effectively playing for their playoff lives, and the Rams were kind of playing for that one seed or one or the division win. And if someone told you that it would be a low scoring game, you'd kind of expect the 49ers to be the ones to win it, given their history of running the football and the offensive line and the defensive line. And it was the complete opposite. And I think that we need to give credit to the Rams. They show up, they go absolutely toe to toe. And I think it's something that I've definitely kind of misconceived or misperceived, where the Rams are kind of the birth of the modern, basically just motion offense of eye candy before the snap and all that fun stuff. But this team has a spine. They punch back. They're
Yep.
physical. It's not just some West Coast offense of, oh, we're going to finesse you. Obviously, the receivers are great and Stafford slinging around is fun. And like, yeah, that's probably what'll always get the headlines when they win football games, but they showed up and they dominated the 49ers. So some credit there. Shanahan, I mean, he not only looks lost, he looks like he's complete, like he looks like he's aged 5 to 10 years from last season. I don't know if you've seen like pictures of him.
Yeah. Oh
Hey.
yeah. He's put on the done face like on the sidelines.
Yeah,
I like
so
I feel bad because we mentioned the Lions, like they're just as bad with injuries in key spots like McCaffrey and Ayuk out for the year. And I understand that. But this is the second time now in kind of a what 4 or 5 year span where they've had the injury bug and they've just had no kind of response to it, which is a sign of mediocrity as a coach, maybe. I know the players do actually complete the plays and are actually the ones doing it, but I don't know. I feel like if there's a will, there's a way with what the
It's
Lions are
I
doing
would
right
just say
now.
not good enough, and as a team that's getting
Yeah, it's a better
older,
way to
they're
put
not
it.
what they were 2, 3 years ago. They're not what they were the first time they made the Super Bowl in 2019. As a team that's getting older, the Super Bowl window options are running out.
Yeah.
You're probably playing for a draft pick this season. There's obviously the Devondre Campbell stuff. Did you see any of that?
No. Oh,
So,
yeah. I did. Him quitting.
linebacker, Dre Greenlaw obviously comes back from his Achilles injury and kind of just slots right in over Devondre Campbell as a starter. And Campbell was not happy about that, refusing to go into the game or into the game in the second half. And the craziest thing for me was afterwards how the 49ers handled it. Because like when you've had certain things like this in the past where like a player acts out, usually teams are like, oh, we'll handle it in-house. We want to handle it in-house. You had none of that. Every
Right.
single guy, whether it be coach, player, GM, when they were asked about it, just flat out said, "This guy's that was absolutely despicable. You can't quit on your team like that. He's done playing for us. Screw this guy." Like they must have really hated him, because usually you take the professional route of, "Oh, we're no further comment," and then like they handle it internally. There was none of that. They put this guy on blast. They had his locker cleaned out a day after the game, and then I don't know if you saw kind of the aftermath. They were sitting there and which I thought this might like borderline like infringe some PA rules, but they were like, we don't want to cut this guy because then he can get rewarded for his bad actions by getting picked up by another
Another
team.
team.
So they go out of their way to find a way to suspend him, and they have now suspended him for the rest of the regular season. So he's not going to get paid and he's not going to be able to go somewhere else.
That's interesting. I did not know about that aftermath portion. To me, that unless they're just that down bad, which they could be the way the season's gone for them with their expectations, That can't be like the first instance of him
Oh,
doing
100%.
something
100%
like
that,
that.
like, there must have had to been some locker room issues because, again, you don't, I'm not even going to say throw a guy under the bus because it started with Devondre Campbell, but you don't take the public route unless you're very, very pissed off. And that doesn't happen after one incident. That's a series of them that probably got handled internally and eventually just turned into, look, man, you want to be public about it, we'll be public about it. Screw you. Your season's done, and we're not letting you go somewhere else to play. Last thing was probably the Dolphins and the Texans, where I kind of watched this game and it kind of had some big playoff implications for the Dolphins.
Stinker for Tua.
Absolute stinker for Tua, three interceptions, should have had five, gets one of his players almost killed.
Yeah, so he, I mean, he almost did get killed. He kind of like, from what I read, was very, very hesitant to throw the ball towards the middle of the field again, like kind of after that happened.
Honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if it was true. I don't really remember what happened afterwards, but it was very, very ugly. The guy obviously right away goes down, kind of arms come out. He doesn't quite get the origami fingers the way Tua has in the past, but like it was clear like this is not good. They had to unscrew the face mask, they had to cut his jersey off. I've never seen that happen to anyone. They were,
Not
from
on the
what I think
field.
I heard, they were sitting there. They had him strapped to an IV before they even pulled him off the
Jesus.
field on the stretcher. He was on an oxygen tank, and like it was insane. And it kind of just brings me to the Tom Brady thing from a couple months ago, where he was like, "Look, like we keep sitting here punishing the defense for these hits, but when are you going to start punishing the offense for being stupid?" And I've said this before to you on here. I've said it to friends. It's kind of Tom Brady talking down from an ivory tower because he's the smartest player to ever put a helmet on. Just like the absolute cerebral assassin. He knew everything about you. He knew more about you than you knew about yourself. But he's absolutely correct. Young quarterbacks don't learn how to actually play quarterback. They just learn how to throw to windows and timing. And my playbook says that I need to throw 10 yards forward and 5 yards to the right after two counts, and my receiver will be there. And they don't actually look to see, well, what defender's going to be there. And it's unfortunate. Like it that was a ridiculously scary hit. I don't know.
It's an interesting theory. I guess I don't know much about how quarterbacks are really taught now to the because to do you think that's this is just my off the hop theory, is that now there's so much stake in college football, especially for these coaches, because not only do the players get paid now, these coaches' salaries are so insane that they don't want to trust the instincts of some 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old to learn defenses, to read defenses, when they're a coach who, if they're gonna die on the sword, they're gonna do it by their way, and that they have to teach that. And so that these quarterbacks, given the stick, college now grow up not learning it at that level.
I think there's something to that. I also think the fact that with the rise of social media and the humans' need for immediate return on investment and immediate appreciation of something, you don't even have time to kind of teach your quarterbacks. You
Learn.
watch every rookie gets thrown into the fray week one. They don't have time to see what an NFL defense does from the sideline. It's just, yeah, go on, buddy. Good luck. We're gonna run our playbook, and if it works, it works. But I don't know how you fix it, because I mean the same goes for the coaches. You don't really get 3, 4 years to put it together anymore. If you don't show improvement from year one to year two, you're on the hot seat, and depending on what options are available, you're probably fired. So I understand why, like you say, they have to sit there and tell the quarterback, this is our playbook, this is when I want you to throw, where I want you to throw to, but it's an awful precedent. And I think Tom Brady is 100% correct, where you're going to see more and more guys that just never really learned how to read defenses. They just learned how to throw to windows.
And is the only solution these guys sitting a year? Like,
I don't
obviously,
know.
Tom Brady was a good story of that, but then really, like you said, no, who's done that now? Like in the modern day of the younger
Mahomes, I
quarterback generation,
guess. He...
Mahomes and Jordan Love. That's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some of the other guys.
I mean, you could argue JJ McCarthy is right now, but he's
Yeah,
pretty much
his is
where
more of
he
an
is in that.
involuntary sitting. But yeah, no, I mean, it seems like now every first round quarterback goes right into the lineup. I'm trying to think of some other options of like actual, because like I can sit here and tell you, oh yeah, Aiden O'Connell didn't start his first year, but we're not, Aiden O'Connell's never meant to be a franchise quarterback.
No,
He was a
yeah.
draft pick and let's
It
have
has to be
some.
like a first round
Yeah.
pick, I'd say.
So yeah, all these guys just get thrown into the fray. I mean, I guess Michael Penix got to sit for a bit, but that's
Yeah.
because Atlanta gave a cripple $160 million, 90 of it guaranteed. And I guess if you want another story, Michael Penix is now the starting quarterback for the Falcons, and Kirk Cousins left him no other choice with the way he played for the last 7 weeks, with like one touchdown and 10 turnovers. They finally won a game, so kudos to them for that. But they're still going to torpedo their chances, or they've still torpedoed their chances, in my opinion, of winning this division.
Yeah, and it's only made what was a weird situation drafting the guy eighth overall after you paid the guy that much guaranteed money, like you said. It only makes it that much more complicated going into next year, right? Like it's just going to be even a weirder and a more talked about and a more controversial. Or
I
do you
actually
think it's
think it's
just
done. Like
his
I think
thing?
they're looking to trade him.
Okay.
I think I said it last week. I don't think he's in Atlanta at the start of next season. And I actually have a different take on it, and it kind of mirrors what Sean McDermott did in Buffalo. Is Sean McDermott his name? Or am I stupid? I think
The
it's,
coach of the Bills, yeah.
yeah. Okay. So the GM, when they drafted Josh Allen at like eight overall, or when they traded up for him, I think it was, that he had a perfect quote. He's like, "If this works, nobody's gonna care. And if it fails, I'm gonna get fired anyway. So I'm just gonna go with my guy." And so I think the Falcons are kind of in a similar position where, you know what? We gave this guy money and we drafted a guy who we think long term benefits us. And if it works, no one's gonna care. We're gonna look like geniuses. If it doesn't, we're all fired anyway. So what do we do?
Right.
So I think maybe they never planned or never hoped for it to be this soon. But if Michael Penix is that good in practice, where despite the bad play of an established quarterback, you've got veterans and kind of talking heads and narratives coming up that this is a better chance to win, good for you. You've made a good pick. If Michael Penix comes in and let's say Tampa Bay slips up and Penix ends the season on that 3-game winning streak and they get to play some home playoff game or games plural, no one's gonna get mad at him.
Yeah.
That narrative will quickly die down. Yeah, you'll have like the naysayers. Oh, well, that money could have gone elsewhere. It always can go elsewhere. What? Watch this. He's not on the team next year. Okay, money's good. Oh yeah, a $25 million dead cap hit. Okay, cap goes up every year. We'll figure it out.
Right.
So,
And on
I
the Kirk Cousins side, you never know. Look at Russell Wilson this year. It could be the same thing. Third
think.
team's the charm.
Hey, yeah, maybe he gets traded to Cleveland, and Cleveland finally finds a quarterback that can that they can support in the playoffs. Because obviously Baker took him to the playoffs, but they didn't support him there.
And you know what? They've had success getting to the playoffs with older quarterbacks, Joe Flacco last year.
Yeah, fair. I think that's all I really have.
I'm trying to think if I have anything else on this Sunday. You know what? There were a lot. This was another Sunday, and this is me harping on the NFL again this year, especially that 1 o'clock slate where you just had so many matchups that were either like, two bad teams like Jets, Jacksonville,
Ass. Cowboys,
or
Panthers, ass.
Cowboys, Panthers, or you had a very like a very good team against a very bad team. And I know the 4 o'clock slate made up for it, like,
Oh, it was 4 o'clock was amazing.
but that 1 o'clock slate, like I said, those bad versus bad, or like the Chiefs versus the Browns. And I know that's a problem because I think it's you have 10 teams that are 4 wins or less right now. That's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we don't have to because it's the end of the show. Like, and we went on the tangent. I went on a tangent and you kind of agreed with me about probably a month or two ago of how it's like that's just kind of how the league works now, is if you're not playing for a Super Bowl, you're playing for the first overall pick. And that in-between mode has slowly and slowly been
build some of the
phased out of
product.
team franchises approach now.
Yep. Completely agree. I don't ha again, I don't have anything else to add. We've got the Bears game on Sunday coming up. And
Michigan State basketball beat Oakland yesterday.
woo, go team. Was that the 24th straight victory in battle in the D or whatever they call that? The duel in the D or whatever it is.
Yeah, I don't know if it's called Duel in the D. Duel in the D is what they call Michigan State hockey.
Oh, okay. Sure. Then yeah, we beat Oakland again. I didn't watch much of this game. I think I only had kind of some of the first half on, and my only real kind of notice was that Oakland was only able to stay in the game because of that DQ or DJ Cole, whatever his name is. He just kept hitting circus three pointers, and it's like, all right, well, this isn't sustainable, and
It
then
wasn't.
pull away in the second half. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I got. So, I'm gonna leave this podcast with a nice little we are.
Penn State.